CliffCentral.com.
Okay, CliffCentral.com. Let me just start my camera up. Leanne Moll will join us in just a second. I don't know where she is. Lebang and Leanne and I this morning. By the way, if you're wondering where where Mbolelo is, he's busy doing more things, and he'll tell us all about those when he gets back next week. But the guy's busy, man. He's planning trips all over the place. Yeah. He's really moving and shaking at the moment. So we're going to be joined in a short while by a guy who I think, you know, these stories are always harrowing, but they're also kind of inspiring. Marco Petrovsky, he was a fitness model and a personal trainer. And he had a car accident, and he lost the ability to use his legs. Now, I mean, this is just the most awful thing. I don't know if I have the mental and emotional fortitude to make it through something like that. I don't know if you, in your wildest dreams, imagine what you would do in that kind of situation. But whatever happens, you know, it's really hard to picture what you'd do and how you'd behave and how you'd react to things. And I just love hearing stories like this because it does remind you of how amazing human beings can be and how incredible their experience can be, how you can keep on going, how you can – that survival instinct, it just kicks in, man. I want to speak to him. So let me tell you what happened. He had this car accident in 2013, and he decided after that he was going to go through the recovery process, and he was going to do whatever he had to do to get back to whatever level of functionality he could achieve after that. Now, imagine you're a fitness model – and a personal trainer. So you're someone who is dependent on your body, not only for income, but also it's part of your identity, right? And he, we'll find out a little bit about the background too, but he comes from a mixed race home, which obviously during apartheid had its challenges because he's a fair-skinned, blue-eyed, blonde-haired boy, but he comes from this mixed race family, which we'll find out about just now. He lost both his parents in the space of 5 years and was then in this car accident just after that. I mean, listen, you get handed some cards in your life, but this is just the shittiest hand you could be given. Really. Unbelievably. He also, as if that isn't bad enough, his then fiance broke off the engagement, leaving him to recover on his own.
No.
Yes.
Ah.
Listen to this guy. Here he is. Marco, what a shit show. What a shit show of a story this is. This is the worst story ever.
Jeez, what an introduction, Garrett. Thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah. Listen, dude, just before we even get cracking, I want to show people a picture of you here and when you won one of your fitness competitions. Just take a look at this guy when he was...
Hi, Marco.
Leanne,
what's up?
Yeah, they're both. So, what was this competition you won?
That was in 2008, and there was the biggest show in South Africa. It was called FAME. Hmm. It was against all the top fitness athletes in the country. It was only my second show, and I'd won it, and I achieved pro status. So it was awesome, man.
It's phenomenal, dude.
I remember that. Yeah. I was actually right behind you in that photograph.
Yeah, Leanne was also.
Oh, you?
She's on stage. There she is in the pink bikini just behind
you. Okay, I thought sorry.
Actually is you. Hey, Leanne.
Yeah.
It is.
So, hey, back to Marco, guys. I know it's hard to focus this morning. All right, so Marco, listen, this is a hell of a story. I gave you the summarized version, but why don't you tell us in your own words? I mean, first of all, what's this mixed race home you were born into during the apartheid era? Tell us who your parents were and what your story is there.
Sure. So my dad was from Poland. He had come through from Poland to South Africa. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a colored lady. Her father was Irish and her mother was colored from South Africa in Durban.
Okay.
And so she had married before a colored guy. And so my family is a very large family, which I love so much. They are all colored. So I call myself the white sheep of the family. And I have been ever since.
That's wild, man. I mean, what a story. Because in South Africa, we're all so obsessed with this. Well, not all of us, but there are a lot of people who are obsessed with this stuff. And we don't often hear the details of it. It's interesting, and it adds enormous texture to people's story when they have something like that going on.
Yes.
And
adds character into you as well.
Because you don't look like you come from a mixed family at all. You look like whiter than me.
With green eyes, I'm very fair. Yeah.
All right. So how did you get into fitness?
Well, I love training. Since the age of 16, You know, I was always active. I went to the gym at the age of 16 years old, and I just loved training. So my physique was just the result of training so hard. You know, I didn't start training to look good. It was just to get in there and to push weights and to get all the endorphins going. Mm-hmm. So I started at a very, very young age. And then a bikini model by the name of Tammy Dreyer, mm-hmm. she had said to me, Jessica, you're pretty good looking. You should try fitness modeling competing. So I was like, there's actually a show for guys like me. Well, let me try it out. So I mm-hmm. took a look. For the first year, I just went to go watch the show. And I saw, like, I can do this. Not a problem. Hands down. So the next day, I'm sorry, not next day. The next year I entered. And, yeah, I pretty much dominated that field of the category. So, yeah, it was awesome. And I didn't want to be so big, you know. My goal wasn't to be like a big guy. It was just to look great, aesthetic,
yeah,
I mean, as we say.
Yeah, and obviously this is all about balance and fitness, and you know, there's some pride associated with that. You when you're an athlete, because these guys are athletes. They're not, you know, they're not just vanity
yes.
projects. They are these are. Yes. It takes an enormous amount of discipline to look the way that you looked back then, and. And people who still do this to this day, they take huge sacrifices and they're extraordinarily disciplined in order to get where they're getting. So it was an important part of your life. Yes. And then this unbelievable disaster happens, I mean, in 2013. And
yes.
I've been in some car accidents, but I can by no means imagine what went through your head and how many times it's played over and over again. I just know that when I've done this once or twice, that you replay it over and over, and you can smell every smell, you hear every sound, and you can see everything, and it's just it bothers you. You keep thinking coulda, woulda, shoulda, but I can only imagine that in your situation, it's like multiplied by 100, because being such a physically vital person, to lose the ability to use your legs. I mean, Jesus, dude, what happened?
And hands as well, Gareth. I mean, my hands also. Don't work at all.
Right. Well, they work better than when you had the accident. I mean, you've been working hard at this, right?
I was completely paralyzed. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't
from the
move anything.
Down.
I couldn't even speak properly. I couldn't laugh. So when I hit rock bottom, excuse the pun, I hit that rock very hard. I lost every single thing, everything you can imagine of, except my laugh. So I'm very blessed to be alive, you know. So the fact that I'm alive, it's all good.
How do you even begin to pull things together when all this shit's happened to you?
Well, to be honest, I couldn't. The very first year and a half, I don't know what was plotting. Such a dark space, to be honest. I don't know where to turn to. I didn't have like the people. I didn't know people in wheelchairs to like peer support groups,
yeah.
which there are today. And yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what to expect. It's intense. It's a very, very dark space. But then obviously I got pushed into the corner and I had to do things on my own. And that's when I had to do things on my own, is where the light came. And I knew, okay, I know what to do. If I got to do this on my own, fine, let's do it. So I did.
I mean, you say it like it's just a thing, but
dude,
this is very hard for the rest of us to wrap our heads around. Did you think about ending it all? Did you, because you couldn't
Many
even, because you couldn't even move, right? There was nothing you
That's
could
it.
Do. If you wanted
That's
to kill it. Yourself, you actually couldn't have even done it. That's a hard realization.
Trust me, many times, not now at all, but in the first, yeah, a couple months, year, I could say, undoubtedly, and especially when things got really, really tough. It's like, come on, you know, I don't want to be here. But yeah, I couldn't do anything. I mean, I couldn't. Take anything, do anything to myself. I was like, oh, well, there's a battle in the mind. There's a real warfare in the mind. And once I conquered that battle, then I knew, you know, what worse? What's worse? You know, things can get worse. Trust me, guys. Things can really get worse in anyone's life. But we've got to appreciate every day. And like, you know,
so,
like early on,
just
the
to
fact
us,
that we can get up is.
To give us perspective on this, before you'd even had the accident, you'd lost both your parents. And you were in a relationship
yes.
at the time. And, I mean, you can't blame her. But your fiance left you as well, because I mean, it's just it's too hard. If you are the person who has been in the accident and you've been paralyzed, that's one thing. But if you also have to be the person who then has to stick around and support that person, that's an emotional drain. That
not knowing at all, like
yeah.
it's completely unexpected, and
yeah.
No, there's definitely no blame and no fault at that.
But, dude,
but right now, I mean, I found the love of my life. I've got the right lady right now. So
you have? Congrats.
Of course.
That's
yes.
fantastic.
I'm married.
Congrats, yes, man. Didn't know
we
that.
We met 3 years ago. And my wife, actually, she proposed to me on the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. A year later, not knowing how on earth we were going to get married. We really didn't know how we were going to do it, but we did it. We pulled it off because I promised her that it's going to happen. So a year later, on the 14th of February, I made the love of my life. Who met me as I am in a very dark space.
Sure. She must be a tough person too.
Like a diamond. Absolute diamond. She's my more than a gem. She's everything to me. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. You know, love really does conquer all. Really, really does. Seriously. If everything doesn't work, trust me, love does. It works. True love.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I do believe you because you're in a position to be able to say that with authority. What kind of day-to-day stuff do you have to do to keep improving your motor skills and your ability to do certain things? Because you've made insane progress over the last while. Insane. I mean, there's just some people who never ever move again. And maybe, just maybe, it's because of your extraordinary mental tenacity and your strength and discipline, the kind of stuff that made you a success before this as well, that you're able to...
And your Polish genes.
And your Polish genes.
Yeah. Very correct, yeah.
And those colored genes, let me tell you, those are tough.
Those
things will pull you through. But what do you have to do every day in order to keep improving?
Number one, got to keep my mind intact. You know, when I wake up, I have to keep it positive. I mean, I watch you guys in the morning from 6 until 8. And then I've got to get into just a whole lot of... masterminds and motivational talks, not motivational speakers. I do know how some guys feel about motivational speakers, but you know, it does get you out of spaces at a good time.
Right.
So I stretch, you know, I have to stretch. I do dynamic stretching. If I'm not too sore, I'm in pain all day, every single day, no doubt. But if the pain's not so bad, yeah, it sucks, man. But if it's not so bad, I get up and I do some training. I'm very, very lucky at the moment. I just got a job finally.
Oh, yes?
For people with disabilities internationally. So I'm now an online wheelchair fitness instructor. So it's all very, very brand new. Amazing. And I'm so excited. I haven't worked in 8 years. And the fact that I can do what I love and just to do it naturally as an occupation, it's like a breath of fresh air.
I'm really so...
It's so cool. That's amazing.
Yeah. Marco, I need to ask, like, how are you able to stay, like, this positive? Because, like, I've got people in my life who also accidents, whatever the case, lost the ability to move. And it's almost like as the support structure of that particular person, obviously we also go through, like, you know, we also experience some sort of trauma. But what I'm asking is, how do I get that person in that situation to remain positive and sort of have that hope and get out of that dark place? Because after like the 10th year, it sort of just gets like, you know, on autopilot now. So how are you doing this? Especially the positivity aspect, because you're saying it's all in the mind, and I completely agree with that.
Yes. Now, you know what it is, Lebang? It's things can always get worse. Things can always get worse. And when I see people like less fortunate than I am, doing the best that they can, it motivates me. So seeing people that are less, like I say, less fortunate, and seeing them what they're doing just gets me going. I'm training a guy by the name of Max. He's a paraplegic, and he's a wheelchair bodybuilder, and he's unemployed. You know, he's raising 3 kids on his own. They're small little ones, and again, he motivates me. So the guys that I help, which are not many, but the guys that I do help, and to see their progress, to see how well they're doing, gets me going. So if that answers the question, driving around and seeing people that are on the sides of the streets, and it makes me wonder, you know, I put myself kind of in their position. It's like very cold, you don't have much, it sucks, and then they have to walk whatever it is to the shelter, to wherever they are, and every day for them it really sucks. So the fact that I have a roof over my head, I've got a wife that loves me to the end of the earth, that's for sure, I've got 3 amazing little pups that keep me going. That's what keeps me motivated. That's just being grateful, being absolutely grateful for each and every day and everything we have around us. It can get worse. That's the thing. It can get worse. I've been there. I thought I was on top of the hill until I got, you know, shoved down, hit rock bottom very hard, and I was like, okay, and I bounced back and things got great again, but I regressed more. So I noticed, okay, yes, I got better, but then I got worse. But then I got better and I got better than that. And that's what just keeps me going. It's like competing again. You know, you compete, set a goal, work towards it, dominate it, then set another goal. So yeah, if that answers your question, just to keep me going. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, shit. Unbelievable. So what works now and what doesn't work? You showed us your hands, but is are you able to move around? Are you on crutches? Like, what's the story? Because I see this picture here, and you can explain what the hell's going on here. You're learning to walk again, right?
Yeah, that's me, yes. That's at the Walking with Brandon Foundation.
Yeah.
And that's where I went in 2018, and they got me training. Hmm. So I'm on the crutches. Frick, that is so difficult. I'm looking at the picture now. And just forcing my body to move. I'm on a harness, so that is holding me up in case my knees do collapse. Mm-hmm. And I've got my crutches there, and just taking each step at a time. It is so difficult. You know, when I've done about a 20-minute walk, it feels like an hour run at a high pace, sweating, heart beating. The mental strength that I have to use just to move those legs is crazy. But every time I take a step, it's like, okay, again, Marco, again and again. And again, and it does get better each time. It's like, okay, cool. Then the session ends, like, okay, I want to go more, but I've got absolutely no strength, nothing gassed in me.
How well have you proceeded from then to now? I mean, like, how far can you go now, and what are you able to do now? Because it's amazing what the body can do, right? I mean, this is the most amazing thing is that. We are such resilient creatures. Well, some of us, people like you, are such resilient creatures. what are you able to achieve now in terms of movement?
Well, my best record is 32 minutes walking with a standing frame. Sure. So that's the best of which I've done, which was quite a while back.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what I cannot do. I cannot get off the bed and I cannot do things on my own. But what I can do is like pick up a bottle, use technology, is very easy. Feed myself when I'm upright. If I'm laying down, obviously can't. And, I can brush my teeth, feed myself. That's just the basics, really, that I had to reprogram myself. If you can see my hands here, so that's my right grip. And this is basically my left, which is not much. And,
Jeez. It's still phenomenal. I mean, if you think about where you were a couple of years ago, that's quite something, right?
No, I'm very grateful for every little progress I make. And it's macro progression. So the more I train, the better it gets. Not big, it's not huge, but small differences. And that's the thing, the small differences count. And the more effort you put in.
Strive for progress, not perfection.
Well said, Leanne, 100%.
I identify so much with the photograph that was shown. My mom suffered a stroke a few years ago, and she's in a wheelchair. She's able to walk with a walker and a little bit of support, but for maybe 5 minutes at a time. And exactly what you said, where she is exhausted after walking those few steps. And I think a lot of it is mental exhaustion.
It definitely
forcing,
is.
As you mentioned, forcing your body to take those steps is a huge mental battle.
But if we don't take those steps, we'll just get worse.
Dud says, respect, Marco. Makes me feel bad for complaining about trivial shit and being lazy. It's really inspiring, man. That's something I think about often. Thanks. When I hear stories like yours. Ruth says also, incredible story, Marco. Promise not to moan about cuck. You're a light. You know, we do. We moan about stuff. All the shit that you cared about before you had your accident. Yeah, money and how you felt that day and what you looked like and what you had and you didn't have. Suddenly, when all of this shit starts to happen, you get perspective, right?
Mm. Absolutely.
Here's Lana.
Clarity.
Lana says, Marco, I used to bake tons of gluten-free blueberries cheesecakes for you and your gym friends and omelets, loads and loads of omelets. I miss you, Marco. Lana.
Yes.
Sends love.
Awesome. Nice. Yes, I remember, Lana. Awesome.
That's great.
Thanks so much, Lana. That was great.
Please ask Marco, says Carl, how he survived financially for 8 years without a job. That is crazy. Sure.
Mm-hmm. That was very, very difficult. So I had to wait for a road accident fund claim, which took quite some time. And in that time, my attorney was helping me out. And I also had a whole lot of donations and people that just put pitched together and just helping out, because it was very difficult not being able to make an income, then paying for medical bills, rent overhead, food as well, all of that. It was very stressful. Look, it still is stressful at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
But that's how I managed through.
Yeah. You very quickly figure out who your real friends are, huh?
Whoa. Very quickly. Very, very quickly. It took about a year and a half to kind of sift through. But yeah. I mean, people come into your life for a reason, you know. It's not that they aren't friends. They still are friends.
Yeah.
They're just not here anymore.
And some of them aren't necessarily strong enough to be able to understand.
That's very correct.
And that's not, yes, that's not your fault. It's not even theirs, really. It's just, it's an incapability that they have, I suppose. But this is proof, yes, says Freedom Vartis. I love that name. Proof that somewhere in all of us is this power. We've just got to find it. So why wait? I'm in awe. Yeah, that's great. That's a really good point.
Thanks so much, Freedom Vartis.
Yep, Captain Cook saying the mental battle is probably the biggest one. You'd agree with that, right, Marco?
Yeah. Absolutely. The first year still is. I mean, like I said, the first year and a half, I don't know what was happening. And every day, like, yes, Captain Cook, it is a battle. It's a battle I'm willing to take.
Yeah. Yeah. Gen X says, I will remember Marco's story every time I want to complain about anything. Yeah, me too. And DPU is saying, wow, Marco, I just realized I don't have problems. Bless you. Yeah, thanks, Ndipiwe. Yeah. Vyasin also saying, I'm going to give this interview to the ungrateful people I know as a Christmas present. Amazing person, Marco, truly inspiring. The ungrateful people that Vyasin knows. That's awesome.
I like that one. I like that
Sit down. Here's your brandy pudding. Now I want you to watch this. You're not leaving the room until you finish watching
You ungrateful sack of shit. All right, this is a picture of this is a picture of Marco on his wedding day. How amazing is that?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. That was awesome. That was really awesome. That day was absolutely amazing. Like I said, we didn't know how we were going to do it, but it really did happen. By the grace of God, it really did happen.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. Do you ever threaten to leave her and then realize that you can't?
No. Well, not when it gets into heightened little bit of conversation, then you have your arguments. I tend to say once again, no, shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. You're not in a great you're not in a great bargaining position, Marco. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
What do you miss the most, dude?
Just doing exercising. Look, I can train, but getting up in the morning. So what I miss the most is literally opening my eyes and going, I can't wait to go to gym, because that's what I felt for many years since I was in school. I used to wake up and go to gym. That was the first thing in my mind. So that's what I miss, being able to get up as I open my eyes, because I have to wait. And I rely on everyone to do things for me. So I just have to wait until my carer gets here at 9 o'clock. I've learned so much patience as well in this time. So I miss being able to do things that I can on my own. I'm a very stubborn person as well. I like things done a very certain way.
Yeah.
And then I've had to learn now to have patience and just let people do it. And if they don't know how to do it, just explain, communicate in the right way of how I'd like it to be done.
Well, I mean, I can only say to you that it's a pleasure to actually meet you on the show this morning. And I know you've been listening for a while. You've been part of, you know, you're one of those people who comments every now and then. And to hear your story from you and be able to think about what you've been through, I think for many of us is just hugely inspiring, dude. And please keep on doing the good work, because honestly, like, there's some fun comments there about giving, you know, this interview to ungrateful people. But all of us, and I can say this as I did on the show the other day, before we had you on. I'm so glad we got you on eventually. But you really are an example of just how incredibly resilient and powerful human beings can be. And probably more than you ever would have been when you were at your peak physical fitness on the stage winning awards. You deserve more awards now than you ever got then.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Gareth. I really appreciate the words. And thank you for inviting me onto the show and joining guys.
Sure, man.
Really awesome. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marco.
To see you, dude. And have an awesome weekend.
Cheers, guys.
All right.
You too. Rock on, guys. Leanne LeBunk. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers.
Bye. Cool. What a great story, huh?
Sure. Yes, yes, that was so triggering for me. Oh my gosh, I should have known that he was coming. Yeah, I was just sitting here like, oh my gosh, it's like my entire, like my entire young adult life was literally that. Things that I guess I've just like hid in the back of my mind and never really gone back to. Now I'm sitting here like,
Do you mind telling us why? I mean, I don't know this about you.
I mean, yeah, like. It's like a long story, but like long story short, and it goes back to the bipolar thing. So my mom was like in a depression for some parts of her life, and she ended up kind of like trying to like off herself.
Yeah.
And it resulted in her jumping out of, I guess, two stories at Sunny Hill Hospital.
Jesus.
And she ended up, yeah, losing her ability to walk. Oh, no. And yeah, till today, we're still battling that. We're still trying to work through it as a family. And it's, like to see Marco just be like, yeah, stay positive, you can do it. I'm just sitting here like, nigga, what, how? You know, because it's as the support structure of, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm trying to get her to do all of this. And look, it's gotten better over the years. I mean, now she's like on crutches, so she's slowly getting there. And, you know, doctors are like, yeah, she should be driving by now. She should be this, she should be that. But it's all in the head, right? It's it's like only until like she believes it, will it start happening. And I mean, as her kids and as her family, all we can do is just kind of like hope that she can get there and hope that she can see it. So it's a lot. I'm incredibly triggered right now. Thanks, Gareth.
Sorry, Lebang. At least you know that there's like a, you know, the sun rises at the end of the story. If Marco's story can tell us anything, it's that it's possible to come back from this stuff
and do
good things. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to ruin your Friday morning.
Hey. It's okay. It's Black Friday. So after the show, I'm just going to get in the car and freaking go get tons of nappies. So it's okay.
Wow. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, gosh.
Hectic. Well, to just make us take things less seriously, here's Carl. He says, this fucking whiny Marco. Yesterday, my internet went down for 20 minutes. Come on, Marco. Grow up. People are such shits. That's so great. I mean.
Carl.
Yeah. Whew. I mean, the guy who.
That's one thing that's kept my mom going is her sense of humor. My gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about where that positivity comes from. And, you know, I totally get. I've tried to put myself in her situation so many times, and I think I wouldn't have made it. Mm. She was so close to death so many times, and I don't think that I would have made it. I know that things change and you fight for your life, etc. But she, what a fighter. And her sense of humor as well is what gets her through it. Being able to laugh is absolutely everything. I have videos of my mom just laughing at things because that's what like inspires me and keeps me going.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, it is amazing. Like you don't know until you're in that situation whether you have the strength or not to overcome it, right? And even for those people who, like you, Lebang, are that you have these people in your life who are dependent on you and who need your help and who are in this situation, and it's a hugely taxing thing and a traumatic thing for you, and you don't know until you're in that situation whether you can handle it or not. And then sometimes, miraculously, there's just the strength that comes from somewhere, and you find yourself doing things. It's like those stories of those moms who lift up a car to rescue their kid from under it. It's like there is superhuman stuff in all of us, right?
100%. And I guess like, you know, you'll never know that side of yourself until you're really pushed to the limit. Until you're really pushed into that corner, only then will you be able to see that, oh shit, I actually am capable of this. Oh crap, I actually can carry this load. I actually can do this. And if that thing never happened, you'd never know, right? So, you know, it shows you things about yourself as well that really do test your strength and your will. I mean, I was complaining to Rena just the other day, like, oh, Rena, I'm going to be late for work. I have to drive my mom to the hospital again. And I'm so fed up. But like, guys, at least I can drive her to the hospital. Yeah, she needs to be driven around. At least I can spend time with her. Again, it could be worse. In a worse situation, there'd be nobody to drive anywhere. You know, she wouldn't be here.
Right.
In the same way you were saying there, like when your mother just constantly is at the door of death all the time, but she keeps making it back and she can laugh at that. So I'd rather have to deal with having to drive her around for the rest of my life and for the rest of her life. And
on a much smaller basis, for this reason, even if Christmas with certain family members is tough, just think about what a real problem some people have. I mean, you know, you might have someone at the Christmas table this year and you think, oh, that asshole, I could do without that person. Just think about how some people are going to have to negotiate and navigate Christmas this year. It's just madness. We were talking with Pumi yesterday about Thanksgiving, and a bunch of my American friends have been posting their Thanksgiving pictures on Facebook, and it is a nice holiday. I do like the idea that these people get together and they just show some gratitude for the people in their lives and the stuff that's going on around them, and for their, you know, everything, their homes, their kids, their pets, their friends, their careers, whatever it might be that you're grateful for. Like, it's maybe that's a holiday we should take over, like we did with Halloween. I mean, Halloween is a very American thing, but South Africans do it now. And Pumi made the point yesterday, maybe we should do Thanksgiving as well. Wouldn't be the worst thing. I've got family who, family friends who live in England, and one guy, he married an American woman, and they've imported Thanksgiving into England. So now their family do turkey twice in a year instead of just once. So it's a big thing. Cool. Somebody here said, I think it was Carl again being stupid, but guys, Black Friday, please remember that all Fridays matter. Making it political.
Get this guy in a leash. Carl.
Well, Okopotse says, Carl, you're a douche, lol. That's so great. Apparently, newsflash, the UK has put 6 African countries on the red list, including us. Oh, God, here we go again.
No surprises.
Here we go again. Forget about fucking England. Forget about going to the UK. All right, don't worry, Gareth. The impending lockdown will spare us from these Christmas frivolities. Oh, God, this is such an irritating thing. Again, perspective, you know, we just spoke to Marco. We just heard Lebang's story. We heard about the guy who was locked up for 43 years and he did nothing wrong. Perspective. So we'll lock down. It's not the worst thing that can happen. It's not the greatest, but it's not the worst. I think we should do Thanksgiving, says Olivia. It's a very healthy thing to be grateful. Yes. And Corona's Boring says, isn't celebrating Thanksgiving in England kind of counterintuitive? Yeah, because the people who went over to America and settled there were giving thanks that they were in America and that they weren't in England anymore. So it's kind of it's a bit dumb, but what can you do? Hey, this week we recommend you a podcast of the week, and we recommend you listen to the latest episode of Life with Lebang. It happened yesterday live.
Yay.
And you spoke to somebody about emotional abuse. Now, this is really interesting and something which probably doesn't get as much attention as physical abuse. So tell us about the show, and then people can go and listen to it.
Yeah, so I guess like the main reason why I wanted to speak on emotional abuse is because like around me, I'm realizing that there's like a lot of really strong men who are currently in these relationships where they're being emotionally abused by their girlfriends.
Really?
And I'm just sitting here watching it. Dude, it's like 3 or 4 of my friends.
Really?
I'm like, geez, are you guys okay? Like, what's happening? And, you know, usually when we speak about abuse, it's like, you know, obviously because the numbers show that it's, you know, women, blah, blah, blah. Mm. So, yeah, I thought, hey, this is an interesting perspective because, number one, it doesn't get spoken about often.
Yes.
And number two, abuse as a concept is automatically sort of attached to physical abuse.
Yes.
But the mental abuse and the emotional abuse that people are experiencing is bizarre. So I just really unpack like ways to identify that maybe you're in one, or maybe you are the one that's making it happen. And also it's not just relationships. It's in the workspace. Mm. It could be, you know, like just amongst friendships. It could even just be amongst family members. And emotional abuse is what's sadder about it is that it's like the slow thing that happens in your mind where slowly, slowly you're decaying and you're losing yourself and becoming more and more of just, I guess, this possession because of how this other person relates with you. They end up just isolating you and owning you, and you don't have your own life. So it was quite, you know, alarming as I was unpacking it, how many people on social media were also like, oh, actually, yeah. And people WhatsApping me during the show like, oh my word, you've just hit a nerve. It's so real. And it really is the little things, like if somebody is, you know, going through your phone without your permission, or if a person just like skims through your social media. And these are all like low-key, I would say, psycho things. But it's real. And there's long-term effects that are just not healthy for anyone. And I also unpack ways to get out of those situations, like run, just leave, you know, get help. Don't turn against your family and really just free yourself.
I'm going to listen to this. I'm sorry I missed it yesterday, but at least it's there as a podcast, you know, one of the best things about podcasting. But this is something that kind of came up on Monday with Hanan, because we had Dr. Hanan on and we got an email from someone called Rachel, who says that her friend that she's been friends with for like 30 years has this really nasty partner who won't let him talk to any of his friends. In other words, she's completely isolated him from his friends. Now that sounds like emotional abuse. I wonder how much this is happening. There's no real way to measure this stuff, but you know, there's no reason why it can't go female to male as opposed to male to female. When we think of abuse, we always think about it going in one direction. But humans are horrible to each other no matter what their gender is. And I wonder how much of that, because there's this ugly cycle that I think also comes into it. So sometimes you end up with emotional abuse from one partner, you know, like a passive aggressive thing. And then the other partner reacts maybe with physical abuse. And then the two kind of are like a toxic combination that people can't get out of. I wonder if that's some deep-seated problem that we have to deal with in South Africa. It's probably part of it. Robin says these women must have kids that trap them with the father. That also happens. That happens a lot. Snai says, I agree with you, Lebang. Emotional abuse is very difficult to move on from. And then Robin says, rather don't jump into bed until you know someone. Next thing you're pregos and you're trapped. That's also something.
Yeah.
And then Cabello
it's a lot going on.
Cabello says that's called gaslighting. Yeah, that's correct. Gaslighting, you know where that comes from, by the way? There's this old movie where there was this husband who used to turn down the lights every night, and he'd turn it down a little bit more every night. And then the wife was saying, I'm sure the lights are getting dimmer. And he was saying, no, they're absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with the lights. And every night they'd be dimmer and dimmer and dimmer until, you know, eventually she'd be falling down the stairs and shit. And it's called gaslighting because you're basically distracting someone. You're telling them one story, but you're doing another thing. And they're completely confused as to the result.
There's a real life example of gaslighting.
Yeah.
Finding out on your phone, because your accounts are connected, say it's your Twitter account, finding out on your phone that your partner is flirting or has relationships with other people and watching their conversations back and forth. Going into the room where they're doing this and saying to them, are you done with your conversation?
Oof.
And then saying, you've invaded my privacy by looking at my messages. That's the distraction.
That's gaslighting. How dare you?
Look at my messages?
Like, never mind the fact that I'm doing shit. Don't look at my messages.
Yeah. Oh, that's some serious gaslighting.
I can't trust you. You don't give me any privacy.
Yeah.
That is so abusive.
Listen to this. Olivia says, abuse goes both ways. Humans are just horrible to each other, and the micro-abuse turns into violence. Kirtan says, my nephew's wife controls him like you can't believe. She blocks his phone from his parents. They can't even call him. You see, this is some sick stuff.
What?
Chris says, I went through this. I couldn't see friends. I left eventually, but it took it for a long time. Kirtan also says, we were so shocked, and they were married for only 2 years. Man, people are putting up with some shit. People are doing,
and you know, the scary
things.
Thing, I guess, as the victim, you know, victim in inverted commas, like, because you keep taking this abuse over and over and over again, you sort of normalize it, right? You get too comfortable in it and you stay because it's what you know. And then there's the fear of leaving. Like, where am I going to go? Starting over just doesn't sound like an idea. Who's going to love me? All these, just like the idea of loneliness. So you'd rather just settle and put up with the bullshit.
Well,
but you don't realize that it's actually eating away at you.
You've just hit on something which is a really, really big discussion we've got to have at some point. Maybe we've got a little bit of time, but George is going to join us in a moment. It's like, would you rather be, because for some people being alone or being lonely, let's not say being alone, because there are lots of us who don't mind being alone, but being lonely for some people is worse than anything else. And they would rather be with someone who's toxic and horrible than be on their own and be lonely. Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, because you can be lonely and still be in a house full of people.
Jeez.
So the idea of actively choosing that is just, nah, let me rather not have to suffer that loneliness and just be around people, even if it means I'm suffering, like rather the suffering that I can take. But loneliness is like, it's deep. It's really, really deep. And that's like the bottom of the barrel. So people will really settle. They're willing to settle and not fight for themselves anymore. And it's happening more and more and more. And right underneath our noses, around us.
Right.
We just don't know it.
And I wonder how many people are living like that in this misery, but they put on a brave face. You know, they pretend everything's fine. They tell you, oh, no, no, my husband and I are so happy at the moment. And then, you know, you find out like 3 or 4 years later that she was just going through hell and she just wasn't brave enough to tell you, or it was about putting on a good face, you know, looking like she could handle things when she couldn't. It's tough stuff.
Yeah. It's also the default, especially amongst women and, you know, women who are friends, to say uplifting things and nice things like, you know, you've got such an amazing marriage, or Steve's so lovely. I'm so glad you guys met. I found myself doing that just casually after a lunch one day. And I said, you know, you guys are so well suited, and just a nice thing to say. And the response was tears followed by, we're actually getting a divorce. Just showing you how much your friend could be covering something up like that.
Yeah.
Well, this is why I don't ask anybody personal questions. I could, you know, I could just save myself from from having to deal with it.
Just worry about yourself, Gareth.
Is that where Mbulelo gets it from? From you?
Well, no, I think so. He totally got that on his own. He was like that when we met him. But there are people like Mbulelo and I. Listen, Leanne knows this, and you know this a little bit, Lebanga. If you are going through emotional shit, I'm not necessarily the first port of call. It's not going to always go well. If you rely on me for emotional support, there are better people to do that.
I've never phoned Gareth and said, can we talk?
Yeah, no.
What would I say straight away is like, about what?
Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. And then Leanne would go, ugh, you know,
aren't you seeing your therapist?
Don't worry. Yeah, don't worry. I'll talk to someone else. Anyway. All right. Listen, here's George Meany, everybody. It's Friday morning, which means we get to check in on the Auto Trader Pod with George Meany. And George, what's happening with you today?
Hey, Gareth. Hello, everyone else. And
hey, George.
George.
I was lucky enough to drive a McLaren GT yesterday.
Jesus, not bad. Ooh. That's very nice. Tell us more.
You know, so what an incredible car. So, you know, last week we were talking about EVs, and I still am in love with V8s. You know, this is a V8 twin turbo, no hybrid electric, nothing. 0 to 100 in 3.1 seconds. When this car's turbo starts, it pushes you into where there aren't any back seats. So what an incredible car. There's only three of them in the country.
George.
The McLaren GT.
You realize that this is going to throw a spanner in the works for all those people who go, oh, George only cares about EVs. He only cares about electric vehicles. Because now you just said you love a V8, and I'm sure driving that car is an absolute thrill, man.
Absolute thrill, absolute thrill. And you know, the funny thing is the engine is in the back of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no barrier between the cockpit and the engine bay. And they've got this cover over the engine that you can't slash with a knife. And it only allows heat this cloth to heat up to 40 degrees. That's how this cloth, the technology in this cloth is made. And it also dampens the noise. So you can't really hear at the end, you're actually sitting with your back against the engine.
Wow.
Which I thought was incredible. You know, it's you're sitting in the engine bay, and it's unreal. Not overpowering the cabin.
So where did you go? Because when you drive a car like this, you first of all want to avoid those speed bumps that are everywhere, because the car's low, right? So you have to be extremely careful and go really slowly on normal suburban roads. But if you can find a nice stretch of open road and you can open up that engine properly, yes, that's a thrill. Where did you take it?
Well, I took it in and around the Randburg area.
Because there are no rules. Everyone knows, everyone knows Randburg has no rules. There's no one there. It isn't. No one bothers to enforce the laws in Randburg.
Yeah, that's true. So I found a road that that was 100 kilometers an hour speed limit, and the car just gets there so quickly. You blink and you're on 100. And funny you talk about speed bumps, Gareth, because this car is the same ride height. If you look at it, you would think it's lower. It's the same ride height as a Mercedes-Benz C-Class.
No way.
In terms of the bottom of it. So speed bumps aren't a problem. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to go crawl sideways like the guys from Springs that do their lowered suspension.
That's phenomenal, man. So anyway, cool.
About the McLaren. So I got a cool McLaren hat.
That's very nice. You didn't get the car, but you can have the hat forever. I mean, it's an experience.
Yeah, I couldn't afford the car. 4.6 million rand.
4.6 million. Ah, please, George, for you. You guys sell cars like this on Auto Trader all the time. Come on.
Well, talking about selling cars like that on Auto Trader, Gareth, you know, we've got, I don't know whether you're anti Black Friday or not, but today is Black Friday. And we have over 600 million rands worth of cars on blackfriday.autotrader.co.za.
George, I'm only against Black Friday if it means having to go somewhere. If you're talking about doing Auto Trader on your laptop, that's a different story completely. And if there are savings involved, exactly. I'm all for it. Good stuff.
So 600 million rands worth of retail value on our Black Friday platform, over 700 cars, 30% more than last year. Mm-hmm. And the first ever electric vehicle, a 2021 Jaguar I-Pace EV400 with almost 100,000 rand saving, going for 1.559 million rand. So mm-hmm. First EV ever on Black Friday. There's a Rolls-Royce Phantom, which is an extended wheelbase a car like a limousine,
yes,
going for over 500,000 rand saving. This Rolls-Royce Phantom is usually goes for 7 million rand. They've got it up on our platform for 6.5 million rand. So if you've got 6.5 million rand lying around somewhere,
sure,
go and buy yourself a limousine.
Hang on, let me just check. Where's my wallet? Shit. Yeah.
Just checking in the envelopes next to my desk.
I don't have enough, George.
I know, hang on.
Can I put a deposit?
They're all empty.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Leanne. I've got a 200 rand deposit. Can I put that down on it?
Sure. So you can have the right front door handle.
Yeah. Probably not even that.
Probably.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of real cars, so here's an example, a Ford Ranger, one of the most popular cars in South Africa, 3.2 liter TDCi double cab, only 28,000 kilometers on the clock, 2020 model, usually goes for 699 or 700,000 rand. Black Friday special is 429,000 rand.
That's amazing.
So you've got a 270,000 rand saving on that particular car. So go and check it out. There's an S-Class Mercedes-Benz, which, your friend will like. An S-Class with a saving of 450,000 rand, and then a Range Rover with a saving of 400,000 rand.
That sounds like a good saving. So George, I'm curious, and maybe you can tell us next week. You're going to ask the guys at Auto Trader to do a proper, deep dive into the data and figure this out for us. I wonder what the most in-demand car in South Africa is, which there's just no supply of at the moment. Like which car South Africans are desperate to buy? Like if you had 10 of them on Auto Trader, you'd sell all 10 in 10 minutes. What is the most in-demand car in the country? And it doesn't necessarily mean by price or, but it's just there's a limited supply. There's a huge demand. You couldn't sell enough of these if you tried, because Phil was telling me from DeWitt Motors. He was saying to me a while ago that the Pajero I was driving for a long time, he says you just can't get them anymore. People are absolutely desperate to find them, and the price is going up and up and up.
So we run a metric in the business called advert view per car per day. Mm-hmm. And that's the perfect metric to judge whether a car is in high demand and low supply.
Yeah.
So I'll go and have a look which car it is, and then I'll bring back the answer. I know that the VW Polo is high in demand, but it's not the most searched for car on Autotrader. BMW is actually the most searched for car on Autotrader. But what you're talking about is different. You're talking about low supply, high demand.
Yeah.
Where Polo, there's high demand, high supply.
It would be really interesting. Hmm. Carl says, I just checked that the repayment per month for the McLaren, if you bought one, would be 102,000 rand a month for 5 years. Yes, yes. Lebang, you got some cash lying around?
So what sort of salary?
Is that it? Only 102? Oh, come on.
What sort of salary would you need to justify spending 102,000 rand on a car per month? So what sort of salary do these people have?
So, Leanne, the banks will finance a car with somewhere between 20, 25, up to a maximum of probably a third of your income. So for 100,000 rand, you probably have to earn north of 300,000 rand a month.
The part of the story that you're leaving out, though, is that anyone who buys one of these, Leanne, they don't...
I mean, it's just double what I'm earning now.
No, but someone who buys a McLaren, like George was driving... isn't going to pay it off month by month. They're going to buy it in cash up front, straight away, once off.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Well, I mean, talking to Daytona yesterday, who brought us the McLaren, and if you listen to the Autotrader podcast next week, we interview Daytona, who is the supercar importer in South Africa. And of McLaren and Rolls-Royce and a couple of others. He was telling us that, these cars depreciate at 1 million rand a year. So you can't buy this car for 4.6 and expect it to maintain its value. These are cars for the super wealthy that, 300 million rand net asset value, losing 1 million rand in a year to drive a McLaren, so be it. So these things are not really financed.
No, it's amazing. It's a different world. So Cabello says, Cabello says, sell one kidney. The bad news, Cabello, is I don't know what your kidneys are made of, but I don't think we'd get that kind of money for any of our kidneys. Anyway, that's pretty amazing.
Very true.
All right.
So Gareth, there is this, you probably know this, but there is this a place called Christmas Island.
Mm.
And in Christmas Island, or at Christmas Island, on Tuesday this week, part of the annual migration of these red crabs crawled across a road on the island and stopped traffic. Now, these crabs are protected. The funny thing is some people get out of their cars, they lay on the ground, and they let the crabs crawl over them.
Yeah, because that sounds like a good idea. Now, that sounds really smart. Crabs crawling all over you. Do you want to see a picture of what these things look like? Some people are into this weird shit. So here we go. Let me show you a picture of these crabs quickly. I would not... be one of these people lying down getting these things crawling all over me. But it's like a mass migration. Look at them. Yuck.
Mass migration.
Yeah.
Over the island. So, and if you don't know where Christmas Island is, it is slightly south of Singapore in the middle of the sea.
Yeah.
So that's the crab migration. And then here's a funny story. It only happens in America, but a woman accidentally ran over her husband, not once, but twice.
No.
So what was happening was both about 25 years old. It was a Saturday afternoon, and they were in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. The woman saw a bowling ball rolling down the road and crossed its path, crossed the car's path. And the bowling ball got jammed under the car, so they stopped. So her husband got out, and he politely crawled under the car to try and get this bowling ball dislodged. As he was crawling under the car to get the bowling ball dislodged, a would-be robber came up to her window and tried to snatch her purse.
Mm-hmm.
And in trying to snatch her purse, she hit the accelerator.
Oh, Jesus.
And she drove over.
Oof.
When she heard the screams, she then put the car in reverse and drove over him again.
Oh, my God. What a horrible...
That he was lost in the car. So he was in critical condition. He's now okay. But she ran over her husband twice because of a bowling ball and a would-be thief.
I mean, what are the chances of all of that lining up?
I think she hated her husband, and she made up the whole robber thing because he couldn't see. He was under the car. She made up the whole robber thing just so she could drive over him twice. She really hates him. That's my take.
All planned. All planned. Absolutely all planned. And then in California, on a freeway, a cash in transit vehicle had an accident. And the cash just went all over the highway. And there were hundreds of people jumping out of their cars, picking up this cash. And the San Diego police, all they could do was stand by and take the details of the people that were effectively stealing. But hundreds of people were running all over the highway trying to collect these dollars.
That happens here whenever a milk truck or a beer truck gets into an accident. Yeah, any truck, even if it's Iwiza maize meal. But look at these Americans grabbing the cash. Look at this chick. She's like, look at all my money. what she doesn't realize, this idiot, because she put this up on social media herself, is like she's going to have to give all that money back because now they've got her photograph.
Yeah.
Never. If you're going to steal from a cash in transit truck, don't go on Instagram and boast about it, you moron.
Exactly. People. My sense
amateur.
Is exactly.
Oh, how amateur.
That's it for this Friday, Gareth.
Well, that's also it for us this morning. Lebang, I hope you get better and you get rid of all this sinusy, asthma-y nonsense and have a good weekend. And Borge, have an excellent weekend too. Leanne Moll, we'll see you on Monday. Cheers, everybody.
See you then.
Bye.
Peace.
Good weekend. CliffCentral.com.